whole entire, you know, sections of our economy would collapse because they've all spent all their marketing dollars making people feel bad about themselves.
Yeah,
but they know that if I can make you feel, make you think, right, maybe not, you know, in the best way, and then go out and, in this case, purchase my stuff.
Clear thinking, cogently discussed. If that's what you're looking for, you may have come to the wrong spot. On the other hand, they are nice guys. Mark and Mike, it doesn't take a genius.
Ramsey!
Marshall, can I just acknowledge, as we start, that we have been talking for over 90 minutes before we press the record button. Planning future episodes, all sorts of good stuff coming down the pike. And then at the last minute, we decided to do something completely different from everything we were talking about. So, you know, this may be interesting. I'm just looking forward to it. So, but you had an idea. You had a good idea for what we do.
And now for something completely different.
That's right.
Yeah. No, we were talking about, and it was all in parts of what we were talking about. We were talking about getting people to change, getting ourselves to change, persuading people, marketing, and we were talking about all this stuff. And there's this common theme to all of that, which kind of defies the face of logic. You know, we're fond in our workshops of asking people, we'll do the show of hands thing. How many of you believe you are a rational decision maker? Hands go up, right? How many of you believe you make decisions based upon emotion? And a few less hands will go up. And then we tell them, it was a trick question. All decision making is emotional. Right? We make a decision based upon feelings and emotion, and then we go and we find some facts that justify the decision so we can explain it rationally. And when you think about that, you're thinking, wow, you know, most people just really don't understand that. So if you don't understand that, you don't understand how would you ever persuade somebody to buy your services or to change behavior or to do something different. It's not going to happen. You know, this came up. We were in one of the dealerships I work in. We have a salesperson who was on salary, and he was making X number of dollars on salary. We figured out that if he would go to commission, he could make a lot more money.
Yep.
So the manager laid out, you know, did the calculations over the last 3 months. You would have made this much more money, to the penny more dollars, and it was decent money, additional based than the salary that you're on. Let's switch you over. So they switched the salesperson over to commission. Mm-hmm. The salesperson made more money on commission.
I know where this story's going.
We've heard this, right? This is not like a one-off unicorn story.
No, not at all.
The salesperson is already asked to go back to salary.
Yep.
And the manager is completely confused because the logic, the numbers tell you, dude, this is what's best for you, your family, your future, right? You're great at this. You're killing it. And the kid is miserable, doesn't want any part of it. And we see this with all these different types of pay performance, right? You're like technicians, salespeople, things like that, managers, where they don't want to make more money. They want the security of a set amount per week.
Right. Yeah. I actually had a young man at one of my clients who, refused. I mean, this went on for months and months, and he said, if it's okay with you, I'm just going to keep getting paid hourly. It was not even like, I mean, there was a tiny bonus, but like he really wanted hourly pay. And I get it, retail hours, you know, that's part of it. Retail hours are hard, but I mean, they just showed him on paper, you would make so much more money. Can we please put you? No, my wife would not be comfortable with that. I'm not really comfortable with that. So this is not a one-off example, and it's one of many, many examples of this whole idea that it's not about the logic. It's just not about the logic. Now, let's take that to a book that you're fond of. I've been in the back of the room when you have talked about this book many, many times. The Heath Brothers' Power of Moments. And you pointed out something that I had completely forgotten about, a sort of a sequence that they describe in the book that really speaks to this. And it has a lot of ramifications for anybody listening to this podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The idea is, if you want people to do something different, including yourself, the order of change is feel, think, and do.
Feel, then think, then do.
Right. And so the idea that people are going to make logical, rational decisions, and you know, if that was the case, nobody would smoke.
Yeah.
Right. You know, at one point, yeah, the information was confusing by design, right? There was contrasting, you know, and nobody could prove anything. But now it's pretty much universally accepted that smoking will kill you. You know, so with that, you know, and it's on the package, and European countries, they actually put pictures of diseased lungs on the cigarette packs.
Right.
You know, so the idea that this is rationally known to shorten your life, yet I will still do it, tells you that logic, information-based approaches are lacking in their ability to persuade or change.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I meet somebody that's had a heart attack and lived, you know, you only want to meet the ones who've lived. I always ask them the same question, right? What are you doing different now that, you know, you had this horrible scare? And they're like, oh man, I'm exercising, I'm walking 5 miles a day, I've been eating like vegetables, I'm on this whole food plant thing, and I quit drinking. And I'm like, that's fantastic. Did you know, and I always ask this, did you know that exercising and eating better was good for you before you had the heart attack? And they always just laugh, right? Because they know, you're like, yeah, I was fully aware. And I did none of it. I was having no part of it until I had, you know, and there's a term for it, right? The emotionally significant event.
Yes.
Yes. And the almost dying, you know, feeling like an elephant was standing on my chest, the ride to the hospital strapped on a board, you know, was emotionally, right? Keyword there, emotionally significant, that I started doing all the things that I rationally, logically knew I should have been doing all along.
Right. Right. I heard the man who was president of president or CEO of Ritz-Carlton, Horst Schultze, speak about this. And he used that same term, emotionally significant event. And he said, after about age 14, you just don't have any ability to really change behavior unless you have an emotionally significant event. And so that's what he did. In fact, I was just talking with a hospitality group client about training hospitality workers. And one of the items that Horst Schultze always did was he showed up in a three-piece suit, regardless of what group he was training. He was the onboarding person for the first 30 or so hotels. And so when he would get them off the ground, he was always telling them, you're about to serve ladies and gentlemen, and I need you to understand that you are ladies and gentlemen. That was like the big wake-up call moment. You know, like, whoa, that's a perspective shift. I feel different about this. That's not just, you know, that's logically that's something, but it's leading to a feeling too about how do I present myself if I'm one of those people? Wow, I would act different if I was that way. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm seeing a little bit of how this all might play out, but keep going.
Oh yeah. So when you think about change, right? So we do this in some of our workshops, we'll have people think about, all right, you set a goal, right? Yeah. I'm gonna, you know, do this much in sales. I'm gonna talk to this many customers, whatever your goal is, and then we have them imagine the future.
Yeah.
Sit there and think about how it's gonna feel when you reach this plateau, when you achieve this goal, and literally think about what are you going to look like? What are the people around you going to look like? How are you going to feel? What are you going to see? What's it smell like? What's the setting? And close your eyes and just imagine that. And you know, we want that, you know, create that attraction feeling, right? This is something this is a feeling that I want. And so, and then sometimes I do the opposite effect. All right, what I want you to do is close your eyes and think about how awful you feel because you didn't do what you just told me you're setting out to do. You did not achieve your goal. Sit there and just wallow in the awfulness of not achieving your goal. Oh man. Yeah. You know, and you can see their bodies change.
Oh yeah.
You're right. Their shoulders, you know, go down, their heads drop. You can see their faces tighten up, you know, as they're imagining failure, you know, just imagine failure, you know, and then it's like, all right, we've created hopefully enough emotion that it'll at least get you started down this logical path that you've diagrammed out for yourself. Right. So, just trying to create emotion that will supply the impetus to take action.
Yeah. And those emotions, you're saying that's the start of this process. I'm going to say something, and this may derail the entire presentation here, but those feelings are based on thoughts and beliefs that I have.
Yes.
You know, those come from somewhere. They're, it's not just in a vacuum that I suddenly say, I feel bad. You know, it's because I went through an exercise with you and you had me think about what it would be like to not achieve some of these things. And that led to some feelings that I start using as fuel, I guess, to this, you know, sequence of go, you know, doing something where I actually take action and actually do something about it.
Oh yeah. Oh, and you hear this from great sport athletes. They'll talk about motivation, and some of them will say, I just love winning. I love the feeling of winning, you know, and I just love everything about winning. And then there's a fairly large percentage of them go, you know, I didn't care much about winning, but I absolutely hated losing.
Yeah.
Right. So so for different people, it was a different motive. For some of them, it was all about winning and, you know, how great it's going to be to spray champagne on each other. And for others, it was just the thought of losing was so emotionally painful that they practiced all the things necessary to make sure that they didn't lose. The winning didn't come into play. It was just, I just don't want to lose.
Yeah.
You know, so either way, whichever one moves you is the one that you want to go with.
Well, it's interesting. And this is just another tangent, but I recently learned this, that, you know, we talk about the word repentance or conversion. And, you know, you think of it in a religious term. You know, when you think repentance, you know, I've always been told it literally means to turn around. And I think that is true. I think in Latin, it comes from a word that means to turn around. But I recently learned that it's actually in the Greek, metanoia, which means change of mindset. So, you know, you think about that from a religious perspective, if you will, you know, like if you think about Christian scriptures, which were written in Greek, it would have been, you know, all these places where, you know, God says, repent and believe the good news in the New Testament. It's actually change your mindset and believe in the good news. And that's going to, you know, cause some changes in yourself. So, you know, there are passages all over, you know, the Bible, at least, and I think other religions are probably similar. But the one I'm thinking of is in Romans 12, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing starts with mind renewal, change of mindset. And I guess I'm saying all that just because I'm trying to sort of maybe, you know, square a circle here, but it seems to me that you're helping people get a mindset around something that they're going to then have a lot of emotion behind and be able to have some fuel to go take some actions and you know, think through some things and do some things. But you're going to have to do some feeling on the front end that will only happen if you actually have a little bit of a mindset change. You're going to have a significant emotional event to sort of smack into you and get you to say, wait a minute, wow, I'm feeling some different things here.
Oh yeah. Well, I think, you know, what you say is so important that there's this reflection
that yeah.
you pause to think about what are the emotions I'm experiencing? What are the things I'm doing? And what do I want to be different, you know, and how do I want to be different? When you think about it, you know, our respect-based coaching model is built upon this exact idea. So the first question,
that's right.
Right. You know, thinking back on this past month, this past quarter, year, whatever, what are you doing? What did you do well? Mm-hmm. Right. So we're trying to generate, you know, they get to share, here's my wins, my victories. This feels good. This is energizing. This is empowering. And then the second question is, okay, so what are your opportunities? And that question is specifically designed to create discomfort, to create feelings of, you know, realization. You know, how painful is it to tell your boss, right? Tell your manager, tell you the person you report to, here's where I'm coming up short.
Yep.
saying that out loud, right? And we talk about this, right? It's one thing if the manager says, you know, here's where I think you're coming up short. Well, now we're just going to fight. You know, yep. You've never liked me. So, yep. But if I have to say out loud, this is where I'm coming up short. These are the things I'm not doing to the level right. they need to be done. You're creating incredible feelings of discomfort, ideally, right? Unless they're a sociopath or something. But I should not want to experience those feelings again. And hopefully that is enough to get me to start thinking about what are the logical, rational things that I could do and then act upon them. And that would be the do sequence.
Yeah. And you think about, we had a recent episode about the change formula. You know, that was very much related to this concept that I'm going to, you know, have a vision for the future that's positive. I'm going to have a dissatisfaction with the present that I want to go away from. And I'm getting motivated here, but I need next steps. I need something to do to get me started down this road. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, the sad fact is that this could be used against a person, right? We could make them feel and think and do some very negative results. I think that's in scripture too, the idea of out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, you know, bad fruit coming out of a bad tree, because you've got some things that you've been feeling and thinking through, and now you're going to take negative action or say some negative things. And I'm saying negative in a very broad sense. Who knows what that is? You know, maybe being gruff with a customer or treating an employee like a number instead of a name or anywhere in between. But that's spilling up from somewhere. So you really have to guard this. You really have to watch this and be on vigilance about, you know, what you're letting into yourself that you're then processing and turning over and might be giving you some negative results.
Oh, definitely. I, with all the things that we share, you know, you hearken back to the words of Spider-Man's uncle.
Yep.
With great power comes great responsibility.
That's right.
And so as you think about, okay, as you start to grasp this and think, okay, this is a useful tool of persuasion, right? Can I only use it for the highest of noblest of endeavors? And not use it as a tool for bad. And we see this, right? All you have to do is look at your marketing.
Totally.
Yeah, you're right. Your marketing is all either designed or, right, if it's a beer commercial, right? It's
right. Yes,
here, if you drink our beer, here's all the good feelings, right? You're going to be surrounded by people and there's going to be sand volleyball and friendships everywhere and stuff like that. And so they're getting you to feel. And then you think, I need that beer. And then you go out and buy the beer. So feel, think, do. And just like with a lot of other marketing, it's negative. You know, They want you to feel bad about yourself. You know,
you're going
to
miss out.
Yeah, you're not living up to this body type expectation. Your hair is not this silky and bouncy and wavy in the wind. And you could have all that. You know, how would that feel? And so, you know, somebody told me the other day, they said, think of the billions and billions of dollars that our economy would lose if every woman in America woke up tomorrow and felt good about themselves.
Right.
Whole entire, you know, sections of our economy would collapse because they've all spent all their marketing dollars making people feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
But they know that if I can make you feel, I can make you think, right? Maybe not, you know, in the best way, and then go out and in this case, purchase my stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. And I don't know, when we're going to do this, but at some point we will be doing more on rhetoric. And it's, you know, I know it's one of my hobby horses, but, you know, this idea in rhetoric is that it's one of the liberal arts. You don't get to study these skills unless you're a free person, because it's supposed to help you be free, you know, free from, you know, marketing messages of, you know, not just, you know, political leaders trying to influence you, but now we would say, you know, literal marketing messages, you know, from businesses that are trying to take your money. And it's also to be free of your own passions, you know, that my feelings aren't going to completely direct my thoughts, because I'm going to, you know, be vigilant and focus on the right things that I let in, and so on and so forth. So we'll be talking more about this in the future. But I will say that the one quote that I always remember about rhetoric, and I think it was Cicero, I can't remember who said this exactly, but he said, rhetoric is defined as the good man skilled at speaking, skilled at words.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to sort of always come back to this on the function of, do I have good motives here? Are my motives pure on what I'm trying to accomplish? You know, I can manipulate people. I can manipulate my employees, my customers. What are my motives here? So I think that's got to be a part of the equation that you think through as you, you know, try to implement some of this. Speaking of, how do we implement this, Mike? What's the path to take to make sure that you're, you know, sort of thinking through the checklist and are using this tool effectively?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about our respect-based coaching system and the questions there. And we also talk a lot about getting to know people to understand their motivations.
Yes.
All right. What are the motivations, the feelings that already drive them?
Yeah.
And what is it they're passionate about? What are they working towards? And can I be, you know, kind of like you're saying, right? Can I be that person that helps them to achieve what's important in their life?
Yeah.
And you know, can I help facilitate that? So just asking people, you know, what are your goals? What are your life goals, personal goals? Where do you see yourself in a year, 2 years, 3 years? If you were to have the ideal work day, what would it look like? Right. Just these questions that make people think about what does motivate me? What is the things that drive me and make me even more engaged, either as a customer or a team member?
You know, I don't think we've ever shared your positive discussion questions worksheet. Have we ever done that?
If we have, it's been a few years back.
Yeah. Well, we can edit this part out if you think it's a bad idea, but we could definitely link to that in the show notes, so people have a way to take a step here. Maybe it needs to be behind a paywall.
Ooh, no.
Paywall. That's what they say.
I think because, you know, our faithful listeners, both of you, have made it to this point in the podcast, you deserve bonus material.
Bonus
so material. As a reward for getting this far, there will be a link in the notes that will take you to our positive coaching discussion questions, which some of them lead to some of the conversations that we just talked about. And we've used these for years. They absolutely work.
Yeah, they're home runs. That's a great place to end it. Let's leave it at the bonus material. So yeah, respect-based performance coaching is a way to get at helping people feel, then think, then actually take action and do. And if you're looking for the motivations that people have some emotions around on what they feel, a great starter is the positive discussion question. So we'll link to all of this and hope it just is a blessing to the people listening, both of you.
Excellent. Excellent. And speaking of positive feelings and showering us with good vibes, let's turn it over to our announcer, the highly unpaid Mr. John Wolf.
The man has shared some dank memes with us recently. You have to give it that.
Did we have to say the word dank?
And there you have it. Another session of contemporaneous extemporizing from Mark and Mike. I know it's redundant, but consider who we're talking about. As always, feel free to share the ideas you heard here. No rights are reserved, no permissions needed. Thanks. See you next time on It Doesn't Take a Genius.
That's good enough.